This program was brought to you by Eat On North. Eat On North is a casual restaurant where honest, uncomplicated food is served without pretension. Find Eat On North at hotelonnorth.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And it is a lovely day in Brooklyn. And I can't think of a better subject for today than agave spirits. And in the studio today, we have the lovely Courtney Greenleaf. I realized that, how cool it is that, you know, there is a certification for being a mezcalier. And I don't know if I'm anywhere close to ever becoming that. And I have a feeling you're going to tell me exactly why today, because I've spent very limited time in Mexico, and when I have, I didn't really get to go to any distilleries or even close to any distilleries. I mean, like, I was hanging out with, like, you know, people in Cabo and doing, like, Cabo Wabo shots
right. On
a boat, which is could be fun too.
So
welcome to the studio, Courtney.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Tell me about yourself. We actually just met, and that's shocking to me because I was at the going up 1 year anniversary party last night, and several people came up to me and they were like, "Oh man, you've got Courtney on the show tomorrow. She's like the best person ever."
Awesome.
And I was like, "Well, that's a good way to get started." So, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. So, you are the beverage director
for Rosa Mexicano
and Masa Agave.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we actually just, I just joined the company of Rosa Mexicano about 7-8 months ago, with the intention of opening up our new Tribeca location, which is Masa y Agave. And with that opening, we really wanted to create some different momentum and energy with our agave program, and as well as our culinary side. And I do come with a background, specifically agave spirits. I worked for a long time with Richard Sandoval and Sandoval Restaurants, and really just kind of honed in on agave spirits at that point. And with that being said, it's ironically become the spirit that I've focused on. And we opened up Masa y Agave in October. And we have, in that particular location in Tribeca, which is on 41 Murray Street, we have a beautiful bar in Rosa Mexicano, lined with over 400 different agave spirits. And so, including that, we have our tequilas, over 100 mezcals. We have other agave spirits, such as Bacanora, Sotal, and Ricias. So really trying to be a dedicated place to showcase and debut all the different agave spirits to comb through. And actually what you're looking at right now is another piece that we've built into our program that did take some lengthy time and is still taking up a lot of my time, but we have the Agave Bible, which is a nice...
It's very intense. It's like, it weighs like 7 pounds. I was just looking through this as you were saying that, and it's like, holy shit, you've got a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah, so we also don't want to lose the fun of a Mexican restaurant. So it is lively and energetic, and it's not completely getting schooled and being, textbook material. But this here is a beautiful book that does live in our location, that does, each page is dedicated to different producers of tequila, mezcal, sotal, and is a breakdown of the location of the distillery and the production of how this agave distillate is made, and tasting notes and interesting facts. Of course, the mezcal production goes into a little bit more details, since it is much more of a overall artisanal production, that we have to give credit to that.
So how long did it take to compile this book? Because it's like, it looks really intense.
So,
I mean, it, like flipping through the pages, it is very like welcoming because it does have a lot of like great information in its. Yeah. But I can imagine this taking forever.
Yeah, it was something actually I started several years back and put on pause. And then once I was brought on with this group, they wanted something just like that. So we, I pretty much, it took a good solid 3 months of a lot of my time. And like I said, it's still a work in progress. I flip through some of those pages and I'll notice there's a typo on behalf of that I did. and it's still building. Yeah. We're in the process right now of rolling out a new beverage program in a lot of our other locations, nationwide actually. And so with that, with the cocktails changing and everything and our agave spirits expanding, there goes another agave Bible that I'll be putting together. So right now I'm actually in the process of kind of tweaking it all, adjusting.
It's funny to me because I just like, if I tried to do this, I would, the pages would be soaking wet.
Well, oh.
They'd be covered in like Angostura bitters. And
yes. You know, and it's funny because when we first opened, we had about, I don't know, 25 in our location when we're down to 5. And a lot of them, I think that was the nicest one I could find. Like, and it's still in decent tact, except some of the pages are starting to come off.
So,
but
Okay, so let's talk about this. What was your first like foray into agave, like in tequila? And like, was, I want to know what your first tequila was.
Oh, gosh. Well, I can say I know the first tequila that turned me on to it.
There's a good one.
Because I do remember, you know, the first tequilas was...
you don't have to name names.
No, it's actually still when I was... it was a college experience. Sounds kind of like crude-like, but I did not have tequila in my high school years. And it was just, yeah, it was a cheesy, mixto, gross college shots with limes and just getting it down, and we had fun. We definitely had fun in that dorm room suite that night with a bunch of us. But other than that, what actually tweaked me and like got my attention was actually tasting Casa Noble, Reposado. And to me, since I use like those that French oak barrel, really just lends these, you know, vanilla and caramel. So I was able to really catch on to those notes, and I was like, this is good. This. You know, and I feel like that's what I hear a lot of people say when you're getting people to catch on to the spirit. And also, because everyone pretty much always has that reaction. Like, oh, tequila. Like, I've had that.
Yeah.
That memory. And, you know, everyone has that. And if they don't, it's always so surprising.
Actually, that was the first tequila that my mom tried. I took it. I brought a bottle to my parents' house. Like, it was some holiday. It was like Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that. You know, real tequila appropriate holidays. And she kind of freaked out and loved it. And so yeah, that one actually has a place in my heart just because of that.
Yes.
But I think one of my first ones, like I know one of my first favorite tequilas that kind of like turned me on was Milagro, but I can't remember if it was a Reposado or Añejo.
Mm-hmm.
I know it wasn't the Blanco. I think it's a Reposado.
Right.
I love Reposado.
I find it very unusual, or actually, I find it very surprising when people do taste a Blanco tequila, and they're like, oh, this is so smooth, or then sometimes they'll taste like an Añejo after the Blanco, and they feel like the Añejo, they're like, oh, this is so much stronger. And to me, I feel like it has, I'm always just surprised when people have that reaction. I think it's great, because to me, I feel like, obviously, the Blanco is the bones to a good tequila, and then
yeah, I've noticed a lot of like, especially at the bar, like a lot of customers lately were like Reposado and Añejo were the kind of they were the bigger sellers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people now have been requesting more Blanco tequila,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really interesting.
I think it just goes back to everyone more and more that they want the story. You know, they want to know where everything is derived from and how, you know, that's why I also believe, besides the fact that mezcal is amazing, but also most mezcal production has that story because it is so artisanal. And with ordering that Blanco, I feel like it's, People are understanding what the term is of terroir now when they're drinking tequila, where I feel like they never did before because they weren't really drinking it. I mean, they were drinking and they were shooting, you know, they weren't tasting. And I feel like people are now respecting the spirit enough to taste it and can now break down those other nuances to understand, like, terroir, grassy notes, mineral.
Yeah, I think it took the rise in popularity of mezcal to kind of like get back to that with like Blanco tequila. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know, like mezcal came onto the market as like this kind of like mystery spirit for a lot of people, mm-hmm. and for the people who didn't really necessarily drink tequila at the time, like, you know, because it went from American whiskey. And then mezcal was kind of the thing mm-hmm. after that. You know, like, I don't think that there are any, like, true, like, trends anymore. I think that we just have, like, so much more information out there to where everything just starts, like, you know, rising tide lifts all ships and whatnot. But, so, like, it's really amazing to me, like, that kind of arc and the way that happened and the way people's palates changed that way. Mm-hmm. And kind of adapt to what's going on. Because, I mean, like I said, you know, I've got a ton of people who come into my bar now, and they're all, like, they're all about Blanco tequila.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm, like...
I think it's awesome.
I feel like I don't have enough to offer.
Right.
Like, it's changing the way I order for the bar.
Right. Okay, that's
cool.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Because normally, I mean, if you're not an agave bar, you basically have, like, three, maybe four tequilas, and in my mind, I don't know, I've always been in a Mexican concept, but, like, you know, I think having a collection of, you know, four to seven tequilas has been a good spread. I don't know, how many do you have?
So you've got eight or nine tequilas and like seven or eight mezcals.
Great, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
I mean, I'm the one who ends up sampling them most of the time, but yeah. But that's cool too.
Yeah. But no, going back to like the information of what people are, you know, people are getting, and even it's even just reads on the bottle, you know, where Mezcal started doing that. They will give you all the information that you need, the agave, the crush, the juice extraction, how the oven, what ovens they're using.
And that information wasn't really so much available. Like,
well, I know too, when I first started gathering information several years ago to build a database of that, it was just... Granted, I was newer and maybe I didn't have as many relationships, let's say, with the makers or the owners or the importers directly. So I was, you know, needing to rely on the internet, and it was just impossible. I felt like I was this crazy girl from Colorado, like asking all these distributors in New York City about, you know, what kind of ovens do you use? What juice extraction?
And they're like, who the hell is this person? What do they want to know this for?
What kind of yeast do you put in there? What's the difference? It's like, they were really like, who is this girl? But anyhow, I do think that, now it's educated. It's great. And it really annoys me when the answer is that it's, you know, that's a secret, or we just don't give that information out.
It seems a little suspect, right?
Yeah. It's a hard time.
It's like, you don't have to give it. You don't have to give all the information away, but give something, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think, again, that also comes from just the overall, like, enthusiasm of people, like the customers and people who work in the industry professionally wanting to have that information so they can pass it on to, like, I need to have that information so I can pass it on to my customers. I also want to know what it's about. But it really, I think it started with, like, American whiskey, then moving into, like, agave.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, some of the, like, it's kind of, like, creeping into rums, too, because they're like, oh, yeah, we've been making it on this island forever. You don't need to worry about it. You don't need to know where we get our cane or whatever that.
But no, it's
like, it's a different market now, you know, like, both for, like, consumers and for...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. And it's evolved so much over the past, 10 years.
And, you know, so much in the past 10 years. And with... I think it's just so cool when I'm sitting at a bar randomly, like, in my neighborhood, And I swear I see so many girls just come in and they just order like a mezcal neat. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
This is so cool. It's not even like an agave bar. You're just ordering a mezcal. That's so great. And then also on top of it, you know, we've been working now with Ricea being available to us for, I think, I don't know, a year and a half, over a year and a half. And that's just been really fun to also have people's reaction. And
yeah, it's some weird stuff. I like it. It's really cool. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, let's talk about some Ricea and Sotol and stuff like that, because I need you to teach me. All right, back in just a moment.
And this track's called Casanova by a guy named Tom Cruise. That's C-R-U-Z. We'll be right back on The Speakeasy.
Hi, I'm Brian Alberg, and I'm the executive chef at Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts is a casual restaurant where good, honest, uncomplicated food is served to our guests. Our restaurant is part of the hotel called Hotel On North, the newly opened boutique hotel in downtown Pittsfield. We source local ingredients from our neighboring farms and offer an all-day dining menu of flavorful American cuisine for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and on weekends we serve brunch. Our oyster bar serves up delicious shellfish and oyster samplers until 11 p.m. Check out our menu at eatonnorth.com and follow us on Instagram.
And we are back. We've got Courtney Greenleaf in the studio today, and we've been talking about agave. And right before the break, you just mentioned Ricea, and this stuff is awesome. I just recently got to try that. Well, I guess 9 months, a year ago, maybe, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was tasting it, I don't really think that there was enough information about like what exactly it is. I know that it's can't be called tequila because it's not from Jalisco, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's obviously it's made of agave.
Correct.
But to me, it seems like it's a more like single origin, like very much in the same way that like mezcal producers, you know, it's like this is this style from this place.
Exactly. So like,
so am I close?
Yeah. So I guess it gets confusing because it's harvested and cultivated in Jalisco, which that's one of the states where tequila is. That's the one of the states for tequila production. You know, all of what we're talking about is mezcal. You know, it has its two different definitions. But for Ricea, it's, as I was mentioning, it doesn't have its own proper denomination of origin as of yet. They do have a governing body that's working on developing that and protecting and creating those areas. But yes, it is kind of in the coastal and mountainous regions of Jalisco. Just I kind of describe it as just east of Puerto Vallarta and west of the Valley of Tequila, kind of in that area. And I describe it to people when they're sitting at my bar as just out there. I call it, it's like the moonshine of agave, of tequila, let's say. But the laws are not set as they are for tequila and mezcal. So there are particular regions within the state of Jalisco where Ricea is being produced. And traditionally what they're using is they're not necessarily using like earthen pits. They're using more of like adobe ovens that they're building that are inverted or the biggest thing that I find is that it is such a small production, so they're still using like a hollowed out trunk to like mash the cooked agave, which is awesome. So hand mallets. And for distillation, they don't require that it's distilled twice, which they do for tequila and mezcal. So with that being said, the body and the distillate is just entirely different. So on the palate and on the nose, you're getting a lot more acidity a lot of the time for Riceas that are, you know, single distilled. We went to one palenque that, and actually one of the riceas we have here, is distilled out of a hollowed-out tree trunk, which is just awesome. So cool. Like, really? And just to see that production, it really hits home for you, and you're like, well, this is in a bottle at my bar, and this is the production of how you're doing it. It's quite cool. You know, and I remember first time I was, well, doing a little ricea research with my fiance now, but we were in a little fishing town south of Puerto Vallarta, and yeah, they asked, you know, of course they see us as tourists, so they ask us, hey, do you want this, this, and this, you know, asking what fun things we want, and he asked if we wanted ricea. We're like, yeah, sure. So he came back like 3 hours later and came with like a plastic bottle of juice, and it was ricea, but it was something that his, you know, cousin made, and you can very easily judge it by saying, oh, it's in a plastic bottle, and but in actuality, I mean, that is what, you know, they're producing, is that's their local,
yeah,
their local juice that they're making. And now it's been I hate to say discovered, it's been known, but we actually,
it's like actually packaged and
yeah,
exported,
you know, and that's it's just cool. It's just a beautiful way to just, I think, break out of the mindset of people thinking, oh, this is a tequila bar. It's agave bar, you know,
and
let's think about all the different varietals that we have, and teaching people that is very fun for them to register it, because they're like, well, what kind of tequila is this? You know, and they're holding like a mezcal. They just don't get it yet, but
it's hard. It's hard to explain that. It's hard for some people to wrap their heads around, because it's, everything has just been tequila for so long.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Well, in the United States, I guess,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's you have to have a Bible like this in a program like yours, you know, to like get the word out, you know, and really, I mean, like, do you teach classes on agave for customers, or
we've done stuff like that, but nothing on a regular basis. Yeah. I would love to.
Yeah.
I mean, I love talking about it. And I love being a part of groups and just talking about it. It's great. And my biggest, when I get a smile on my face, is when you see that, like, the switch turned and someone's, the light went off in their head. They're like, oh, I get it. And
yeah,
and that's them understanding either the production and the appreciation of what goes into it, or just on their palate, they're able to be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. One of the coolest things to me about just agave in general is just like, well, first of all, the way that the mindset of like the mentality of like the perception of tequila in like mezcal, it's always been thought of, you know, in the United States as something that, you know, it's thrown into a margarita and blended up, or just shot, you know, just taken down as a shot really quick. But it's kind of unfortunate to think about the fact that it's had that perception for so long because of how long it takes to make.
I know.
I mean, before it's even brewed, it's, you know, those plants take forever to grow.
Yes.
And they take a lot of care, you know.
Yes.
And I can't even imagine. And like, I've been meaning to get down there for a while. I just want to see agave fields, man. Mm-hmm.
They're gorgeous.
The pictures look great. But to me, it's really incredible, like, hearing the stories about the humidor, like, and the agave farmers, like, having actual like relationships with each and every plant. They have like the history of them, you know, like, as like one of their children, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I guess I think about tequila production because it has grown so much that, yeah, they're just being harvested left and right. Whereas, you know, the humidors that do have that opportunity to, yes, see that agave plant growing on, it's a tiny little baby, and then growing to its 13th, 12th, who knows, 20 years before it's harvested. I know that my most recent trip was in Oaxaca, and walking through the fields of where they harvest their wild agave, it's cool because they've been watching it for a while, and they just know, like, oh, that's not ready. That has definitely one more year, or at least one more season. It's intuitive, and I mean, they know the way the sun hits the earth at that certain time of year. They know where the water's held in that agave when it's right time to harvest it. You know, they're so in tune with it, yeah, that it blows my mind. And but it is beautiful because it is very much connected to that, you know,
yeah,
earth and land, and unfortunately with some you know, a lot of our mezcal production, tequila production, excuse me, you know, it is such high in demand that we are needing to clone agave or, you know, source agave from different places or perhaps even harvest the agave before it's even matured enough, just so we can get a liquid in a bottle. That's sad. I do have a very dear friend, and she's known me for a long time, and she really had that realization of how long it takes the plant to grow. And she's like, oh my God, it possibly takes 12 years before it even gets harvested and then cooked. And she has a whole other different real vision of tequila now. She's like, oh, I have to save your every sip.
Yeah, gotta pump
like,
the bricks.
This is, you, how can you abuse this and not take it in? Like, this, there's like 14 years right here. So it's cute. It's amazing. It's great.
So let's talk about cocktails for a second. Okay. What? Because we're going to head over to my bar here in a little bit, mm-hmm. to Grand Army, and you're going to... I can't wait for you. You haven't been behind the bar in a little while, so you're like, you're telling me before the show you're excited to get behind the bar.
I'm excited. And, nice. You know, it's funny, like, working in the business, because I've mostly been just doing, like, menu development and managing, and the other stuff of being now, like, a beverage director hasn't really led me much time to be behind the bar. So, yeah, I love it, and I'm excited, but it's also like, oh, Courtney, there she is. She's going to be a little quirky. But thank you for having.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, we're gonna make some
and also, like, thank you, thanks for being on the show today. It's really great to meet you and talk with you, and I can't wait to share the bar with you today.
Thank
from
you
5 to 7 we'll be at Grand Army. Come by, check it out. We're gonna make some drinks and have a lot of fun, and then also go check out Courtney's programs at, like, how many locations do you guys have now?
We have a total of 14.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so we have 4 in New York, but span in Boston, Miami, D.C., and then L.A., San Francisco, Minneapolis, Atlanta. Yeah.
So that means, like a bunch of our listeners don't have to, they don't have to pop over here to go there.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of what we're talking about is we'll start seeing those changes being made in all these locations when it comes to the expansion of our agave program, these Bibles for them to read, the cocktails will be changing. So bringing some authentic kind of connective tissue back to our beverage program at
That's so cool.
The company.
And what are the websites again?
We are at, the website is www.rosamexicano.com.
Cool. All right.
All the links are in there.
Oh, great. Cool.
Per location. So.
All right. Thanks again for coming on, Courtney. Let's go make some drinks now.
Awesome.
All right. That's Cheers. It for the Speakeasy this week. Check in to Heritage Radio Network for many other programs like this. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.